Good afternoon, all of you, and a special hello to everyone watching online. So if you've been following the news, I think most of you have, there's been something that seems to be occupying the news 24/7 these days, a virus. It's been in the media for several weeks now. It's commonly known as the novel coronavirus, or COVID-19. Today we're going to look at viruses, other diseases, and most importantly, what we can do about them. The title of today's message is Coronavirus, Pestilence, and Disease. Now back to COVID-19. The origins have ranged from anything from, I think they were first talking about this seafood market that was selling all of these exotic animal meats that people would eat. Snakes was one thing thrown out there. Bats have about a 97% sequence match, but they actually found a creature that is also sold there that has a 99% sequence match to the virus, and they think maybe it came from this spiny anteater called a pangolin. Have you ever heard of a pangolin? Not a penguin, it's called a pangolin. And it kind of looks like a lizard. It's prized for its meat, for its claws, for its scales. And it, too, was sold at this Huanan seafood market. There's also been a lot of theories, and you might have seen them, that it was actually bioengineered at a biolab about 300 yards away from this seafood market, and it was originally a bioweapon. So no one knows for sure. Who knows if we'll ever really know for sure? But the numbers of the dead are and infected are changing hourly. They change daily. And when I planned this like a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's just change and change and change. So this morning, my wife keeps very good track of it. She looks at a website called worldometer.info. And before I left this morning, I got the most recent numbers. And they're probably all changed now by the time I'm up here. There's 105,563 known cases in the world. So the deaths, the known deaths, of course not all is reported, but are right around 3,500, 3,562 known deaths. In the U.S., we've got 361 cases and 17 deaths reported that are at least attributed to this particular virus. So, you know, what we get out of China as far as the news is subject to whatever they want to tell us. They're not necessarily a free society. You know, communist dictatorships tell you whatever they want you to believe. So whatever the truth is, and of course that's the epicenter of this whole thing, even in a free society like the United States, you've got to really look for the truth. It's not always meted out by the media so well. So if you really want to know what's going on, you got to do your legwork yourself. So far, the best number that I've heard for the fatality rate for this is right around 2.3%. I've heard higher, up to 4%. Some people even say more. But if we just go with 2.3% infected people to mortality rate, this is quite a bit different from the flu. I mean, people are saying that this is no different than the flu, but the mortality rate for the flu is 0.1%. So if you just base it just on that, you can do the math and see that in the United States, roughly 30,000 to 60,000 people a year die of the flu. So that's relatively alarming, but that's at 0.1%. So whether it's a big deal, whether it's just overblown, as some people say, this is one big nothing burger, as I like to hear said, whether it's that or whether it's actually something that's going to cause massive deaths throughout the world, it's not for me to say. That's not even why I'm up here, and I'm not even going to give my opinion on that. But I will say one thing, and that is we can see for sure that it is affecting the economy. It's affecting the financial markets. Most certainly it's affected China's economy dramatically, and it's also affecting our economy. So what it does health-wise is something else, but it's definitely affecting the economy, and in so doing, it's going to affect all of us. So have we had any large-scale diseases like this recently? I mean, it seems like every 2 years, every election year, there's some kind of a disease, but there was actually something in recent years, and I'm going to say 100 years ago as being recent. You guys have probably all heard about the Spanish flu. And if you remember the numbers or have ever looked them up, but it's actually quite alarming, and it was only 100 years ago. It infected 500 million people were infected, and it killed an estimated, now, I mean, 1918, you've got countries, it was right after World War I, so the reporting wasn't done as well as it could have been, but it's estimated 20 to 50 million people died of that. That's a lot, 20 to 50 million people. And in America, we can at least count a lot closer than, you know, countries that we can't get a hold of, but it was 675,000 people died in America. This was 100 years ago. So I ask you, if this sort of thing is spoken of in the Bible, and if so, who said it, who talked about it, and where can we find it? So let's go to the Bible right now, Matthew 24. We're going to start in verse 3. Matthew 24:3. Now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered them and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceive you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, so that you are not troubled. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." Verse 7. "For nation will rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places." So he uses the word pestilences, and I have a New King James. The New King James and the King James both say pestilences, but most other versions don't even say pestilences. It's not even in here. So I looked it up, and I have a commentary on it. Ellicott's commentary is telling us what happened here, probably why they don't have it. It says the word has probably been inserted from the parallel passage in Luke 21:11. Of course, the Gospels all cover a lot of them the same thing, so it was, however, the inevitable attendant on famine, and the Greek words for the two, famine and pestilence, limos and loimos, were so like each other that the omission may possibly have been an error of transcription. Barnes says about verse 7, pestilences, raging epidemic diseases, the plague, sweeping off multitudes of people at once. It is commonly the attendant of famine and often produced by it. We actually have another scripture available to us that describes the pestilences here in Revelation. We'll go to Revelation 6. And I don't think the word pestilence is necessarily used here, but it's covering the same thing that Christ covered back in Matthew about these end-time events. Revelation 6, verse 7. "When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, 'Come and see.' And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And the name of him who sat on him was Death, and Hades followed with him. And power was given to them over a fourth of the earth, to kill with sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beasts of the earth." Barnes elaborates a little bit on this pale horse. This word properly means pale green, yellowish green. The color here would be an appropriate one to denote the reign of death. As one of the most striking effects of death is paleness, and of course, of death produced by any cause, famine, pestilence, or the sword. From this portion of the symbol, which is the pale horse, if it stood with nothing to limit and define it, we should naturally look for some condition of things in which death would prevail in a remarkable manner, or in which multitudes of human beings would be swept away. And yet, perhaps from the very nature of this part of the symbol, the pale horse, we should look for the prevalence of death in some peaceful manner, as if death is peaceful, as by famine or disease. Red would imply dying violently, as in war. So, as we've been hearing on the news, viruses are most lethal to those with a compromised immune system. People that are unable to defend against this virus. The very young, because they don't have a fully developed immune system yet, and the very old whose immune system has become worn out from just many years of fighting the battle. But many people in the middle can also fall prey to that. And it's this group that I'm speaking mostly to today, and that is those that should have a strong immune system, but in fact, they probably do not. So back in 2009, I just got this number of 57 million people who die each year back then. 15 million die by an infectious disease out of 57 million people that die. Out of that 15 million, 75% of those people that died, they died of pathogens called zoonosis. Now that's just like the place you go to see the animals, Z-O-O, and just like this, N-O-S-E-S, zoonosis. And what zoonosis are diseases that are transmitted between animals and people, as the name would imply. Most of these diseases, of these 75% of pathogens, could have been avoided by people following the simple food laws that are in Leviticus 11 and not eating all of these crazy things that they do. These exotic meats, the bats, the snakes, the pangolins, or even penguins for that matter. None of these things are food for us. And the thing about it is that, you know, God gave us these food laws. I know a lot of people, when they come into the church, they miss the things that tasted so good. I grew up in the church, never really had buttered lobster or bacon, and I understand that they're pretty flavory, but God gave us these things not to punish us, but to keep us healthy. That's what he gave those food laws for. And we can see then, you know, how much of diseases would be avoided by people actually living by Leviticus 11. Now, when you add to people eating these crazy things and you add international travel where we can go around the world like that to overcrowded cities like we have up there in China, all over the place, these cities are clearly too crowded. And you can start to spread things like this coronavirus. So early on, I heard that you are actually 2 weeks before you present, you can still be giving off this virus. And it takes you 2 weeks to actually show. Now I've heard more and more and more that it's actually 21 to 24 days or more before you're symptomatic where you can actually be infecting people. You don't even have it, you don't know you have it, but you're giving it off. This is very, very alarming. The beginning of Numbers 5 gives us quarantine laws. And we were able to witness that here. The church just south of us down in Salem had a recent December, January, they had the pertussis or whooping cough come through. And I remember them very much putting it out there to people that we must quarantine ourselves. We really have to do this. And I think it really did help them as far as the containment and not letting that just rage through their church down there in Salem. So basically, there's two ways that we choose our actions, okay? We either move away from or we move towards something. We can define it to one of those two. We move toward pleasure, we move away from pain. And I'm talking about generalities here. So if we want to move away from something like a virus or a disease or an illness, what can we move toward? We want to move away from pestilence, as the Bible calls it. What do we move toward? In a word, we move toward health. We all want to be healthy. So today we're going to look towards moving toward health as a way of avoiding disease. And I'm only, just to keep it simple, I'm only going to give you two simple things that we can focus on, two areas of health. And of course, they have to be biblically based because we're in a church format right here. There's a lot of things I could say, but I want to keep it straightforward to, you know, what's from the Bible. So as alarming as these viruses are that we've just heard about, what are the biggest contributors to disease and death today? What are the biggest contributors? So I went to the CDC to get the absolute facts and numbers. The biggest contributors to death and disease, and I'm going to give you the top eight, starting with number eight, work my way to the number one. Number eight is flu and pneumonia. 55,672 people. By the way, these stats are for the United States. These are the CDC stats for the United States. Number seven. Okay, we had flu and pneumonia. Number seven is diabetes, 85,000 and change. Number six, I didn't know this was a bit of a surprise to me, but Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's, 121,000 plus people in the United States die from Alzheimer's. Number five, stroke. Also known as cerebrovascular disease, a stroke. Strokes take 146,000 people plus a year. And I'm just putting this all in perspective. After stroke, number four is chronic lower respiratory disease. I had to look this one up to say, what chronic respiratory disease? Well, what do you have? I have chronic respiratory disease. Well, so I looked it up, and there's basically, it's broken down into three factors. Chronic respiratory disease is bronchitis, emphysema, or asthma. All right? So that takes out 160,000 Americans a year. Number three is accidents, 169, almost 170,000 people a year die from accidents. Number two, okay, we're getting up into the very top two, is cancer. Cancer takes almost 600,000, just a little bit under 600,000 Americans a year give way to cancer. Number one, does anyone know what number one is? Heart disease, absolutely. Heart disease, just a little bit under 647,000 for heart disease, a little bit over that. Again, these are CDC stats for the United States. So here's the thing, is that the CDC themselves say that there is one cause for 90% of these things. They themselves say that. Not only do they say that, but it's also backed up. Harvard says it. Yale says it, Vanderbilt, the Mayo Clinic, and many, many more that I'm not even listing, all say that 90% of all of this comes from one source. And I know doctors that say 95%. I'm going with the lower number from the CDC, which is 90%. What do you think that one source is that causes all of these things? So for you online, a lot of people have said diet in this room. And that is a valid thing. In fact, I'm even going to touch on diet here. But the number one thing that causes 90% of everything is stress. It weakens you. We're going to get into that here. All right. Studies have shown short-term stress actually boosts the immune system. Short-term stress. It's necessary. It's vital. It's good for us. But chronic stress has a significant effect on the immune system and ultimately manifests as illness. The only scientific word I'm going to use here, but I'm going to say it, and I might not even say it right, but it raises the catecholamine and suppressor T cell levels, which suppress the immune system. That's the scientific way that they say this. Now, when your immune system is suppressed, you are unable to fight off things like cancer, heart disease, and many of other diseases that we hear so much about all the time, including all of the autoimmune diseases, we're unable to fight off when we're under chronic stress. And of course, we have the opportunistic diseases like flu, coronavirus. These things prey on us when our immune system is down. I have a little quote from the Harvard Medical School. This is on the Harvard Medical School website. Too much stress for too long creates what is known as chronic stress, which has been linked to heart disease, stroke, and may influence cancer and chronic respiratory diseases. And illness is just the tip of the iceberg. Stress affects you emotionally as well, marring the joy you gain from life and loved ones. So it's even beyond just illness. I kind of liked how they worded that. Now, again, it's necessary. There is good stress that's necessary, and it keeps us alive. We have something, the body has something, actually, that I like to call the military. And believe it or not, it's your arms and your legs, right? So when we're in a fight-or-flight situation, we fight or we run, our arms and our legs. That's what's activated when we go into a fight-or-flight situation. I have a good friend of mine, and my friend likes to show a graphic representation of this, of the mobilizing of our resources for a fight-or-flight situation. So In normal life, we have a functioning immune system, right? It's taking care of all of those organs. It's fighting off all those opportunistic guys that are coming around, the viruses and so forth. We're up here, and our stress level, under good circumstances, is down here. So everything is taken care of. We lead a normal life. We live to whatever ages without all these things taking us out. But what happens is we begin to have stress and chronic stress that never leaves us. And the stress goes up. And as that stress goes up, we're able to devote less of our body energy, our resources. Those things get diverted from the rebuilding of the heart, the kidneys, the liver, the immune system. All of that is not really necessary when you're having to run from a lion, right? You're going to devote your energy to staying alive and getting out of there, right? So all of that energy then becomes transferred from our immune system. And in some cases, and that's kind of my point here, is that this happens to such an extent that it becomes our normal and it becomes our way of life, and eventually we're not replenishing that immune system that we rely on. So if you think about, like, let's just look in the, and you've all seen the nature shows where there's a gazelle out there, you know, nibbling on the grass, and the lion comes, gazelle puts a sprint on, right, fight or flight, and outruns the lion. Lion has to go hungry, sad day for him. But gazelle goes along later on and is grazing again. 10 minutes, 20 minutes later, the gazelle is grazing. Forgets all about the lion. I'm going to go back to my life. We don't do that. We are the only creatures on the planet that can keep that stress situation in the forefront of our minds for our whole lives. Rather than going back and grazing and letting that immune system going back to a peaceful, non-stress state. So we are constantly in a state of unease, or as I like to say, dis-ease, which is where all of this is going, where this comes from. So chronic stress can raise blood pressure over time. Constantly feeling frazzled could trigger heart attacks, strokes, autoimmune diseases, all of the things that make us weak. Let's look at some examples of life stresses, okay? Death of a loved one. I mean, we're going to look at some of the large stressors here. Divorce, loss of a job, increase in financial obligations, getting married, raising children. That could be stressful. Moving to a new home, chronic illness or injury, stressful. Emotional problems such as depression, anxiety, anger, grief, guilt, all of these switch us to a stress state. Here's some more. Not having enough time, that's stressful. Unhealthy lifestyle, like you guys just said. Eating the wrong foods, that's an unhealthy lifestyle. Maybe things that we know we shouldn't have, we're doing that. That can be stressful on our body. Taking on too much. We're just too much. We're taking on too much. We think we can do it. We're stressed. Conflicts. If we have conflicts in the workplace, conflicts at home, stressful. Not getting enough sleep. Lack of proper nutrients, right? Not the right food to keep us nourished. Not enough water. That can stress our bodies. How about obsessing over what someone or some situation, maybe what someone said to us. Maybe they said it to us 40 years ago and we're still stressing about us. We're still carrying that pain. These are stressors that keep us in that stressed state. Inability to accept things the way they are. Failure to take time out and relax. Do any of these things sound familiar at all? Anything? So a year ago, I started a private social experiment. I think my wife might have given me the idea, but I started just you know how people have the inane thing? You're somewhere and they say, "How you doing?" And you say, "Fine." You know, it's like one of these little nowhere things. So I thought, I'm gonna bump it up a positive level here, and I'm gonna start asking people, what's the most positive part of your day? What's the best part of your day to get a positive response? Almost without exception, I got the same response from people. People all told me, I get off work in an hour and a half. 5 o'clock, that's the best part of my day. Over and over and over, people were telling me the very best part of their day was being done with how they were spending 8 to 10 hours of their life. How stressful is it to be at some place that you just can't stand? I mean, that's a stressor, right? Difficult people. Being around difficult people. We all have that one person, hopefully not that many people, but difficult people can be stressful. Here's a good one. Watching the news, especially all the news about this virus. That's stressful. Driving in rush hour traffic. That's my big one. I mean, my wife and I had to drive to Seattle recently, and I drove, and I was stressed. And I had to put on some Enya or something to calm me down. It's like, I'm going to zone here and just stop. Because it was too stressful for me. So, all of that said, what is the opposite of stress? Right? We've looked at the bad, moving away from, moving toward, right? We're moving away from stress. The other thing for how we decide what we're going to do is we move toward. What is the opposite of stress? I'll give you a hint. It's mentioned in the Bible more than 400 times. It's in the Bible. Peace. Excellent. Whoever said that. Thank you. Peace is the opposite of stress, all right? So all of the things that I read steal the peace from us if we let them. Now, peace is not just the cessation of violence. We think of peace, you know, war and peace, or countries fighting each other. Peace is actually something that's inside of us, and it keeps us healthy. Just like the Leviticus 11 food laws, peace was given to us to keep us healthy, just like those food laws. Peace is there for us to have inside. It keeps us healthy. Okay, so let's look at a few things that give us peace inside of us. Let's look at Colossians 3, please. Colossians 3. We're going to focus on the moving toward side of this whole thing. Colossians 3 and verse 12. Colossians 3:12. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving one another, if anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. Verse 15. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful. So the peace of God can rule in our hearts. And by starting in verse 12, we kind of bumped on a few of these things which put that peace of heart. If we have those things as something, as the elect of God says, right at the beginning of verse 12, we do this, we're going to have the peace of God ruling in our heart. But is there something else we can do that will give us peace? Maybe if we go and sit cross-legged on a hill somewhere and we do this and we chant or something like that, right? Wouldn't we get peace that way? Let's look at something that tells us what we must be doing. Psalm 119. Psalm 119, verse 165, just the one verse. Great peace have those who love your law, and nothing causes them to stumble. So again, we're on the subject of peace, right? Peace, the opposite of stress. What is our to-do here? Great peace have those who love your law, right? So loving God's law gives us peace. All right. Let's look at Proverbs 3. Loving God's law gives us a peaceful, stress-free life. Proverbs 3, we're going to look at verse 1. 1 and 2. Proverbs 3. My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands for length of days and long life and peace. They will add to you. Again, we're on the subject of peace. Where does it come from? My son, do not forget my law. Skipping over a page to chapter 4, just one page over. Chapter 4, verse 20. My son, give attention to my words, incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to them who find them and health to their flesh. So these are direct ways that we can change our health. Rather than just being frightened, finding what we need to move away from, that's valid. We should move away from things, that are bad. But this gives us something to move towards. Let's look at Psalm 34, just a little bit back here. Psalm 34. You might recognize this because it's still ringing in my ears. And I think it's still ringing in your ears. Psalm 34, 14. Depart from evil and do what is good. Seek peace, pursue it. And I'm going to add in earnestly, because Dwight Armstrong did on that hymn that we just sang. Seek peace, pursue it. Pursue it. It doesn't just say, sit there on a hilltop and chant, and it'll drop into your lap. This is work. We have to pursue it for our own lives, for our health. Seek peace, pursue it earnestly. Again, in the words of Dwight Armstrong. So the first thing to move toward health is to remove stress of our lives by filling ourselves up with peace. Let the bad things go. Just let them go. Seek wisdom, God's way of life, right? Never forget that God gave us one day out of seven to de-stress. That's why we're here. That's why you're all here right now. This is our seven-day, once every 7 days, de-stress program that God gave us. So the first point was to de-stress. And I told you that I was going to give you 2 points, all right? The second thing we're going to explore next. The second thing is to detox. We need to detoxify our lives. We need to de-stress and detox. We need to master both of these if we're going to lead a healthy life. All right? Ecclesiastes 4:12 tells us that a threefold cord, it's because those two words are together. Threefold cord is not easily broken. Now, that's referenced as far as friendship, right? Like we have, if we're out somewhere and we can possibly have friends with us, it's better than just being alone. But I'm going to use it here because there are 3 aspects of our lives. And without one of those aspects, this whole experience fails. We need to have all 3, and we need to have them all 3 strong. So I'm going to look at these 3 aspects. That's what we're going to cover on the detox side of this. So the 3 parts that I'm referring to in our lives are physical, mental, and spiritual. If one of these is ignored or drops, we're not going to make it. We've got to have all 3, and we've got to have them all 3 strong and in balance. So let's start with the physical body, all right? If our minds and our thoughts are good, and our relationship with God is good, which is the other 2 sides, but let's just say our physical body is sickly and ill, we're not eating the right things. We're not getting any exercise. We're letting stress rob us of a good immune system. And we're way down here on the physical level of our lives. We're not going to feel like doing anything else. All we can think about is getting our health back. And I've been there, and I'm pretty sure all of you have been there, where you've focused on getting your health back. You need to be healthy to devote any attention to any of the other important sides of your lives. You've got to have health. So if we don't, we're going to be subject to all of these opportunistic diseases like the virus and the flu and so on. Not only that, but we're going to be distracted by different aches and pains. We're not going to be able to focus on things, and eventually everything collapses and we die prematurely. So in terms of detoxifying our bodies, I'm just going to start with just a couple of things. Get enough water. In order to keep your system clean, you've got to get enough water. Now, I've seen 2 different things. For years they said, drink 8 8-ounce glasses of water. 8 8-ounce glasses. That's quite a bit. I mean, it's kind of hard. I've also heard that if you drink half of your weight in ounces, so if you're 150 pounds, 75 ounces of water a day. If you're 200 pounds, 100 ounces of water. You can do the math. So this is just kind of a guideline that promotes you to drink more water. And hopefully some of us will be getting close there. One good way to do it is just keep it around and drink before you're thirsty. By the way, I think I'm going to have some water right now. Drink before you get thirsty. If you wait till you're thirsty, it's too late. I got thirsty. It's too late, clearly. So, when it comes to food, it's not always easy to eat perfectly. But we can make a commitment to ourselves. We can commit to ourselves to eat the highest quality food that's available to us at any given time. If we have choices, sometimes there's no good choices. You just got to go with the least worst choice. Give yourself that leeway. It's okay. You'll be in that position. But if you have a choice, commit to yourself to always eat the best that you can. If you've got the choice between, oh, I don't know, let's say there's a salad out there or there's just the greasy fried food, you know what the healthful choice is. Commit to yourself to make the proper food choices, to keep yourself healthy. And again, if you're eating things that you know are toxic, I mean, we know what the, I'm not even going to go into those things that are going to that are toxic. You know what they are. But we can't get rid of toxins if we're constantly putting other toxins back in. So let's just cut those things out. And again, we're focusing on health here. We're focusing on physical health. So I spoke to you at Atonement about the benefits of fasting. And I actually spoke to you about a month ago on the sparrows. And so the two things come in handy as far as where I'm going with this, because from my personal experience, I recently had a cascade of events that were potentially life-threatening. And they all happened at once to such an extent that I decided I have to punch the reset button. I have to go on a cleanse. I used to do cleanses at least once a year, and it's been a long time, so I'm accumulating toxins, and it's showing in a physical form that rattled my attention. So when I spoke to you on the sparrows the other day, I was actually on my seventh day of a 10-day cleanse. Nope, I didn't have any food for 10 days. And I felt fantastic. I don't know if it came across, but I felt so good, and that feeling lasted as my system reset. And I'm not advocating anybody do this. Talk to your doctor first. I'm just relating to you my own experience. But again, historically in the Bible, we know that fasting was a useful tool for reclaiming your mental, physical, mental, and spiritual health. I mean, it's something that's there. And I've made up my mind to keep myself cleaner and not let myself, I cannot afford to let myself get to that place again to where I have a cascade of life-threatening things pushing at my door. So the next part of our threefold cord is our mental state, all right? So let's just say we have a body that's like a fine-tuned machine. I mean, we're out there doing marathons every day. We're eating all the right foods. I mean, our body is just perfect. But our second one, our mental state, is we're going around having feelings of resentment all day, thoughts of resentment, of anger and frustration or depression. And it will make all of our physical fitness for nothing if we spend our time full of thoughts that aren't serving us or making our life not worthwhile. So we need to be sure and watch our thoughts. One of the greatest men that our country has ever known was actually mentioned last week in a sermon. He struggled with depression his entire life. He struggled with failures. All of his life he failed. He failed his way all the way up to be the head of our country. And had he given in to the depression and those all of the different failures and just said, I'm going to give in to that, we likely would be living in a geographically divided country. I almost, when I started writing this, I was going to say, we would be living in a divided country right now. And my wife goes, we are. And we are living in a politically divided country. Anybody can see that. But chances are, without Lincoln in that leadership position, we would be living in a geographically divided country since 1865. And I'm just saying so. And I'm only saying that because I'm going to quote something that he said. As an individual that struggled with depression, his quote, and he could say it like this, most folks are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. Simple quote, but so profound. We're only as happy as we make up our minds to be. And he should know. The Bible tells us as much too. Let's look at Proverbs 23. Actually, it's Proverbs 23:7. I'm just going to quote it. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So, if we have anger, if we have rage, if we rage out at things that we can't even control, we are introducing all of these mental toxins into our daily life. And again, we could be as healthy as the healthiest Olympian athlete out there, but having toxic thoughts into our life, as a man thinketh, so is he. So, okay, so we will turn here to Mark 7. Mark 7, verse 20. Again, it's Christ quoting here, Mark 7:20. What comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All of these evil things come from within and defile a man. These are the toxins that we are to purge. And if you think about where we are in the year, aren't we purging toxins out of our lives? Isn't that what we're focusing on as we ramp up towards the days of unleavened bread? Philippians 4:8 gives us the other side of it. Again, I kind of like to approach things as a moving toward and a moving away. So Philippians 4:8 is actually one of my favorite scriptures. Very simple. It gives us a move toward list. Philippians 4:8, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. This is what gives us health. Thinking of these things gives us a healthy mind. All right, so the threefold cord, the third part that I'm going to look at is our spiritual life. Now here we go. We could have a healthy body, right? The Olympian run every day. We've finally gotten over our stinking thinking, right? We keep ourselves positive, but we can still miss the mark if we don't have a relationship with our Creator. If we ignore the spiritual side of ourselves, we become empty. We don't have purpose. So often when people lack a deep purpose that they usually get from a relationship with God, they give up and they stop fighting against all of those things that seek to destroy them. If they allow themselves to become spiritually toxic, they're unable to fight the spiritual viruses and the battles that come along. What makes us spiritually toxic? In a word, again, it's coming up to days of unleavened bread, sin, three-letter word. That's what makes us spiritually toxic with our Creator, sin. You know, David lamented this exact fact in Psalm 51 when he did that awful thing that we all know about. What he lamented was that it broke his relationship with God. That was his biggest lament. Ephesians 6. Let's look at Ephesians 6:12. We wrestle not against flesh, right? But we wrestle against principalities. These are the things, the principalities, the spirits, the things that aren't even available for us to see. These are the things that seek to take us out spiritually. Make no mistake. So if we are carrying the weights, the stresses, and toxicity, physical, mental, spiritual, we won't have enough strength to make it through to the end. Hebrews 12 tells us to lay aside our weight. Let's see. Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. How are we going to run that race if we're just so overwhelmed, completely overwhelmed with stresses? Or we're so completely toxic and carrying all these weights around that we're not going to be able to run that race, right? We got to lay aside those weights of all of those things, the toxins, the stresses, and so on. You know, Jesus told the woman at the well, John 8:11, go and sin no more. That's us too. Go and sin no more. We got to make sure that our relationship with God, our Creator, is healthy and non-toxic. So as we are racing towards the spring holidays, we'll be focusing very, very diligently on removing sin from our lives. We also got to remember not to bring more toxins into that relationship. We also have, like I said, that a spiritual detox program that's going on every 7 days as well, the Sabbath. And you know the beauty of it, if you think about it? We've got a 7-day detox program twice a year. We've got the spring holidays where we're detoxing our lives. We're commanded to do so. And then in the fall, we're de-stressing. We're getting away from those cares of the world. So we have this built in to our very existence twice a year, a nice grouping of days for that. I'm always thankful for both the spring and the fall holidays when they roll around. They help keep us healthy, help keep us able to fight off these spiritual viruses and so on that are going on. And you know, we do have to purge. We have to purge out those toxins on a regular basis, physically, mentally, and spiritually. There's an author that I like to read. His name is David Asprey, and he summed it up rather simply. He said, stop doing the things that make you weak and do more of the things that make you strong. Again, just like Lincoln, very simple. Stop doing the things that make you weak and do more of the things that make you strong. So this is a turbulent time, make no mistake. Things are getting worse, but we don't need to fear. We started this message out with pestilence, and we're going to finish with pestilence, all right? Psalm 91, go with me there as we go to the last scripture. Psalm 91, we'll begin in verse 1. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him I will trust. Surely He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked, because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your habitation. No evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling, for He shall give His angels charge over you. So to sum it up, let's keep strong. Let's keep strong so that we're not vulnerable to the viruses and lifestyle diseases that I told you at the beginning. We need to get rid of chronic stress. How do we do that? We put peace in, right? We need to get rid of toxins physically, mentally, and spiritually so that we can move toward good health. God helps those that help themselves, and it might not always be easy, but our thoughts and our actions are always a choice. We always have a choice about what we think. So let's all choose life.